Well, hi everyone. I think it's 2 minutes or 3 minutes past the hour, so there's always likely to be one or two stragglers who will join late. But anyway, I think it appears that we do have enough to start our call, and so I think we should make a start, and we'll catch up with any latecomers as they come on the call. Christina, can you run us through who's present and the apologies?
Sure. From the CCNSO, we have Martin Boyle, Keith Davidson, Christy Spain, Amber Hart-Lisha, Nigel Roberts, Dottie Sparks-LeBlanc. And from Staff Support Special Advisors, we have Jeff Ackerhuis, Bert Boswinkel, Kim Davies, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernie Turcott. And apologies have been received from Patricia Poblete and Dalsamic. And we're still trying to get hold of Cheryl.
Oh, okay. And I have apologies here from Stephen Deerhake, from Bill Semick, and from Frank March.
And just I have Bill.
Just noting Bill's comments that he the version of an analysis document seemed acceptable to him as it stands now, but he wants to reserve a final acceptance until he's had a look at anything that changes as a result of today. So if we could just note that. Okay, any further apologies? Anyone on the call?
Becky has joined.
Oh, hi, Becky.
Hello.
Anyone else on the call whose name wasn't mentioned? Okay. We have the meeting on the 20th, or confirmation of the agenda, sorry. Is there anything that should be added or deleted or changed on the agenda? Is everyone happy? No.
Can we make it scrollable, please?
It is scrollable.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so confirmation of the meeting report of 20th of June. Is there any comments in terms of what's been circulated? Are we happy to accept that as the meeting report?
We forgot to put in the apology for Kim Davies. I will correct in the next version.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Ben. No other amendments to the 20 June report? Okay, moving on to revocation. Hopefully, with some luck, we might be able to get through the revocation analysis in an agreed fashion today. So I'm very hopeful that we will. And Bernie, do you want to step us through where we're at and what needs to be resolved? Thanks, Bernie.
Yes, sir. Just having a bit of a problem trying to get the document up. Either it's
just while you're loading the document, I was just noting that Stephen's just come onto the call. So, Stephen, we just noted your apology, but I see you're in Adobe Connect. Sorry, Bernie.
Okay. And we have the document up on the page. Okay. Right. So, let me rearrange things a bit here. Sorry if I'm not at full speed, folks. Wish I could say it's jet lag, but it's morning lag. Okay. There we go. All right, so the version that was distributed by Keith was version 9 from June 27th. We've been talking with Eberhard on some possible changes, and we'll get to that. So, moving on. Hopefully the red line will show in this version. Doesn't look like it. All right. That's unfortunate. Let me pull up my version so I can get to the red line. Taking us to section 5322. Still on this version of the document. Okay, so we had some minor changes in 5322. Involves the manager's failure. Well, I'll do it from the beginning. The FOI working group believes that it is inappropriate for the IANA contractor to step in unless substantial misbehavior by the CCPLD manager A, poses a risk to the security and stability of the DNS, or B, involves the manager's failure after notice and a meaningful, was added, opportunity to cure, to perform the objective requirements, i.e. to be on the internet, maintain IP and email connectivity, identify technical contacts, and to identify an in-country administrative contact. So we've added a meaningful, and we've removed subject to previously discussed objections. And hopefully we're okay with 5322. Is that generally the feeling? And I see Al and Nigel have their hands up. Keith, over to you.
Well, okay, thanks, Benny. Firstly, to Eberhard.
I don't think this is the latest version that is on the text, because my the thing that you sent me, my proposed text is not in here.
On 53221 and 53222, no, it's not. That is correct. I was going to get to that. But on the section of the master section 5322, I thought that had been fairly steady all the way through.
Yeah, no, it's just difficult for me to compare the original text and this, but it looks like it.
Okay, Nigel.
This is just a plea, really. It says subject to previously discussed exceptions. It's not really helpful to say that without saying what they are or having that text close by. I wouldn't know where to look from that phrase to find out what they were.
Listen, Nigel, that's not supposed to be there. I'm going to share my screen and bring up the Word version that actually went around. I think that's going to be a lot simpler. For some reason, the PDF is not showing properly again. So give me a second, and I will do that. Share my screen. Desktop. Okay. And are you managing to see that now?
Make it full screen on your text so that it becomes bigger.
There we go. Does that help? I can increase the resolution too.
Yeah.
There.
That's it.
That okay?
Yep.
All right.
Fine.
So 5322. I'm working blind now because I've of course lost the Adobe Connect while we're doing this. So 5322, you've got the changes there that were presented. A meaningful opportunity to cure, perform objective requirements, and we've removed subject subject to previously discussed exceptions, and fixed it to make sure we've got the second part. So we're only talking about 5322 here, and I'm finally awake enough to be on the right part. So, not the subsections, but 5322. Are we okay with that? Steve? Sounds like we're okay. Okay. I would suggest, if you're okay, Mr. Chair,
Martin has his hand up.
Okay, so Keith, I'm counting on you on guiding me through this.
Sorry, I'm waiting for Martin, who's got his hand raised. Sorry, I was on mute too. Martin.
It's nice to see that we're all applying a good bit of discipline on this then, isn't it? The use of the words a meaningful opportunity, I'm not quite sure I properly understand what meaningful would be in this particular case, particularly if, the objective requirements include being on the internet and maintaining IP and email connectivity. So the person is not on the internet and is not maintaining email connectivity. What do we see as being meaningful? What might we see as being meaningful as an attempt for IANA to contact the person? Registered mail?
Okay.
No, we are talking about opportunity to cure, not about notification. That's a different thing. Notice is one thing, and opportunity to cure is another. And here we are talking meaningful opportunity to cure is a separate issue. And it just means that you can't just say you need to fix it by tomorrow or else. And if he says, no, I can't fix it by tomorrow, I need 2 weeks, then they must sort of, you understand what I'm trying to say? That's what it's meant.
Yeah, thanks, Eberhard. I think that's not, that wasn't actually Martin's point, though. Martin, further clarification of what your objection is, please.
It's not an objection. It's a request for clarification. It doesn't seem to me, unless somebody has got a reasonable idea of how long reasonable would be in identifying an in-country administrative contact, or somebody should actually be able to maintain internet, to be on the internet and maintain internet protocol. I don't actually understand what meaningful is, but if other people can identify how they would interpret that...
I have my hand up.
That's actually what I want to hear. Yes. Thanks.
Okay, Nigel, yeah, your hand up is not showing because your green tick is showing, but please go ahead anyway, Nigel.
Okay, thanks, Keith. First of all, in my understanding of British English and civil service speak, a request for clarification means an objection, but we'll pass on from that. Don't know where the word meaningful came from. I don't think it's unhelpful. To my mind, it means more than merely perfunctory. In other words, there has been some suggestion in the past, and there was one occasion that I was peripherally involved in, whereby the IANA sent out an email which said, unless we receive an answer to this email within 24 hours, we will do X, Y, and Z. That's paraphrase a common phrase of Eberhardt's, that's not going to happen anymore. I think that's what's meant, although I don't remember the discussion whereby this word came from, but I don't object to it.
Would the word reasonable, rather, you know, a reasonable opportunity to cure, be more, I mean, reasonable is quite often used in law, and has a specific...
I don't object to that one either. I think they're both helpful.
Yeah, would reasonable help appease Martin's concern over the use of the word meaningful?
You would have to ask Martin that.
Yeah, I am.
I think he did. I don't know, because in spite of initial comments, the question was actually meant in a spirit of inquiry, not of challenge. What I'm actually sort of working on is that meaningful could be quite different for some people as for than for others. Reasonable actually might be slightly better, just the nature of the English words, but it's just that at the moment you've got something that meaningful or reasonable could stretch out for years if the CCTLD manager turned around and said, well, actually, I've got to go and do a full recruitment process in country, and that's going to take me sort of a year to go and interview everybody on the island. And as something as subjective as that, as meaningful, just leaves me sort of wondering, what does it mean?
Yeah, sure, I understand the reservation. Do you think you could, Martin, do you think you could live with either the term meaningful or reasonable? Or would you have a preference between meaningful or reasonable?
I don't particularly have any preferences. I suppose reasonable sounds more reasonable than meaningful, which sounds actually fairly unmeaningless, fairly meaningless to me. But as I say, what's actually giving me concern is having some feel as to what the word meaningful, or what a meaningful opportunity actually is in this case. As people can turn around and say, well, actually, we would see meaningful as being this, or that there is some requirement on the CCTLD manager to identify how quickly he would be able to remedy the deficit, which I suppose would be the other way around in dealing with something that is at the start subjective.
Well, look, I'm happy for lawyers on the group to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's quite a common law understanding of what reasonable and unreasonable might mean under law, and that could be quite usefully contested under any jurisdictional law if this clause was to be tested in those circumstances. So my personal preference would probably be for reasonable over meaningful. However, let's go back to the list. I have Abahat and Nigel with their hands raised. So firstly, Abahat.
I think reasonable is as meaningful, but I can live with both. So if we can agree on reasonable today, then we can move forward.
Okay. Nigel.
I think meaningful is more meaningful than reasonable, and it's quite reasonable to put it in, but I can live with both.
Okay. Becky, any objection to, from a legal perspective, is there a preference for meaningful or, or reasonable, do you think?
No, either works for me.
Either works. Okay. Could we then agree to the slightly less meaningful use of the word reasonable and change it to a reasonable opportunity to cure? Is everyone reasonably happy with that? Okay, I think we have consensus there now, and there are no objections, so can we move on, Bernie, to 5.2 point, it's just disappeared, the next point. Thank you, Bernie. Bernie? You are still on mute, Bernie.
Here we go. All right, I should be back. All right, so I've corrected that to a reasonable opportunity to cure, and we've removed that. Given the next two points have a lot of discussion, and the few other changes I think should be fairly easy, I would propose to do those first and then come back to this so we can work on those after, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair?
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay.
That is not the...
So if we go down...
532... Sorry, the version that is on the text on the screen is not the latest, just to make sure.
No, that is correct, Eberhard.
Okay.
All right, the next big change was a simplification to 53413. It should be up on your screen now. The FOI working group notes, however, that contractor will rarely be in a good position to evaluate the extent to which a designated manager is carrying out the necessary responsibilities of a CCTLD operator in a manner that is equitable, just, honest, or except insofar as it compromises the stability and security of the DNS, a competent manner, full stop. Accordingly, my working group interprets RC 1591 to mean that the IANA contractor should not step in regarding issues of the manager being equitable, just, honest, or except insofar as it compromises the stability and security of the DNS, a competent manner, and that such issues would be better resolved locally. Now, I think Bill has gone through this and said he was okay. Over to the floor. So really, I don't think we've changed anything. For some reason, given the process we went through, it got very Byzantine, and we just recompacted the thing, even with the repetition that we have. I think it's a lot clearer. Over to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Benny. I see a couple of hands up. Firstly, Abraham.
Just a small wordsmithing one. In the black text, basically it says responsibility of an operator in a manner that is equitable, just, honest, or, and then I leave the sentence out, a competent manner. I would replace a competent manner by just competent.
I have no issue with that, but this text was hammered out with Becky. Maybe Becky can speak to that.
No, I'm okay with that change.
Okay, any objections to the change suggested by Eberhardt to change a competent manner to competent? Looks okay to me. No objections, I think. Nigel has his hand raised, but I think that's for another point. So, Nigel. Nigel, you're muted.
Yeah, I should be unmuted now.
Yes, you are.
Okay. Two things. First of all, I think this is a great example of how we can bring clarity from the Merck. It's much more simple and clear in its meaning than it was in previous iterations. So congratulations on that. Secondly, I'm not entirely clear how we reach the interpretation from the source material. I'm not convinced that the policy can be interpreted in this way. But thirdly, as I think deferring things to the local side of things is not necessarily a bad thing, I'm not going to take issue with this, and if everybody else is happy to put this one in, I'll agree to it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not convinced that you can actually interpret 1591 in this way, but it's it's a nice sentiment.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. So I'm taking from that you'll agree if everyone else agrees. I see Eberhard has his hand raised. So Eberhard.
I just noticed that a competent manner appears again in the same context and should also be changed by the objective of competent.
Yep, I see Bernie's already correcting that along the way, and I'm just reading it myself. It seems to make sense. So anyone else have any other comments, any objections, any further amendment? If not, we'll note Nigel's hesitation, but move on the basis of that's agreed at the stage and read again next meeting just to verify.
Keith, can you hear me?
Yes.
You can?
Yes, I can.
This is Dottie. I've been speaking into this phone forever and no one could hear me. I have a concern that has been lingering along, and it's possibly been addressed, but I don't think so, and that is, how many languages is this document going to be translated into, and what do we think is going to be the survival of mischief and substantial misbehavior in all the languages of that it will be translated into, because those are legacy words that were spoken in a far different environment than we have now. And has anybody considered what this is going to be and what translation will do to this?
That's an interesting point. I'm not sure that there'll be any formal translation under CCNSO rules, but it's an interesting point in terms of whether it should or shouldn't be. I'm not sure if Eberhard's looking to address that point or not,
but I
see his hands raised. So, yes, please, Eberhard.
I just don't care in what languages it gets translated. RFC 1591 has always been in English. The documents from IANA function contracts have always been in English. No matter how many translations, this is the document that the IANA function contractor will be held accountable by. So the translations are of no consequence to our brief or to our charter.
Okay, I think just noting, though, that thanks, Eberhard, for putting your point of view with regard to that. But I think it's worth noting that people like Patricio, who has been participating fairly continuously on the way through, has been looking at aspects of how things might translate into Spanish so that there's a clarity for Spanish speakers and so on. So I think, Dottie, there's been some attempt to make sure that we're using plain enough English that it can be translatable without too much concern. So hopefully.
Well, I think it would be useful to have somebody. And the other thing is, with this move towards internationalization, I don't see that everything is going to stay in English only.
Sure, but I think by using plain text, it translates. I mean, plain English text. and with the least amount of ambiguity, then it will be translatable without too many problems into most languages. Anyway, back to the speaking order. I see Nigel and Eberhard have their hands raised, so Nigel, firstly.
Just a procedural point. I understand Dottie's point. The fact is that the working group language is English, and we are interpreting an English document, and we're doing the best we can, and Eberhard's quite forceful point should be regarded as being slightly more forceful, given the fact that it comes from somebody whose native language is not English, or even bureaucracies. I'd really rather like to make sure we get on to the two things that we've skipped over, because I think there's going to be some considerable discussion on the two paragraphs we've skipped over. I can, when it gets into the translation area, is going to have exactly the same problem that governments do and the United Nations. They're going to have to employ not just people who are bilingual, they're going to have to employ professional translators who native language is the language in which they are translating to, and have higher order skills in that language to be able to understand the English and translate it to the equivalent subtleties in Spanish or whatever.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. Okay, I think let's leave that matter to the side, and Bernie, can we please continue? Yeah.
Yes, sir. So I'm taking it that with a competent manner change that we're all okay with 53.413?
Yep.
Noting Dottie's concern about translation. And then we've got, I think that's about it. Yep, those were the changes. The other set of changes. So, back to 53.221, and as Eberhard pointed out, we received some other text. I didn't include it because we didn't finalize it. We'll go through what's here, what was distributed, and then we'll talk about Eberhard's concerns. He did spend quite a bit of time over the past weekend on this. And the issues were around the fact that we wanted to address this issue of subject to previously discussed exceptions regarding in-country administrative contacts. At this meeting, Nigel had raised that you know, it was a bit of a throwaway to just include that unless you defined it. So one of the points was trying to define that. The other point was trying to define what notice, as we have up here, meant. Because as Eberhard pointed out, there were some issues in the past with redelegations. There was some discussion with Chris that this was different, but he felt quite strongly that there needed to be some clarification. We wrote up 53.221 and 53.222, sent it over to Eberhard for comment. He came back with some other text, and we'll start talking about that. So the original 53.221, the requirement for an in-country administrator does not apply to, one, to delegations made prior to the publication of RFC 1591, or two, the CCTLDs corresponding to a country or territory that has no permanent local population. In addition, IANA deems CCTLDs and MIN contact to be in-country if that contact is subject to the same local law as the CCTLD's relevant country or territory. So basically, Mr. Chair, we can let Eberhard address his concerns, and I'll go digging up the text that he proposed.
Can we not see the new text rather than the old text?
I'll go hunting for that, and I'll put it up in a minute.
I mean, I've got some serious concerns with the text that's in front of me, but I don't want to waste time talking about text that has been replaced or potentially has been replaced.
All right, let me see if I can come up with a version.
You emailed it to me, so why don't you go into your mailbox and pull the PDF of that you sent to me?
I think I've got it here, Eberhard. I'm hoping that this will be it. I believe this is the text you're talking about under 53221,
yeah.
Eberhard?
Yeah, that's the one.
Sent me original. I had it into two documents, which is why I wanted to read what was sent to everyone. And this is what Eberhard came back with in 53221. The requirement for an in-country administrative contact did not appear before 1994, when it was first introduced by RFC 1591. Therefore, this requirement may not be expected of country code top-level domains created the application of the RFC. CCTLDs that represent territories without permanent population will, by definition, not be able to meet the requirement. So, this is the second version. Then we started having some discussions with Eberhard around the meaning of created. Some people felt that if we use created, that's when the country code was in the root, and therefore most of the ISO 3166 codes that are currently in use, this could be interpreted to mean that they're not covered by the and let's be clear here, we're talking about the administrative contact in-country requirement. So, over to you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Bernie. I see, I have some very specific problems with the word created in this sense, but firstly, I see Nigel has his hand raised, then Eberhard. So, firstly, over to Nigel.
And at this point, for some reason, Adobe Connect has just disappeared on me. It's now saying connecting trying alternate server. Is anybody else having problems?
No.
Okay, let me see. It's now come back on. No, it's not. Okay. All right, let's see if I can do these two from memory then, because it just vanished from my... site as I was about to start. Somebody see the expression the RFC in the first of the two paragraphs?
Sorry, Nigel. I'll tell you what, Nigel, maybe it might be better if we give you an opportunity to reboot or refire it up. And
Well, no, it's easy because these are two extremely quick wins. The expression the RFC in the first of the two paragraphs should be that RFC.
Doesn't say the RFC. The publication of that RFC, yes.
Just for clarity.
I've changed
it. I'll come back to the second one because I've forgotten that one. I'll come back to the second one.
Okay, thanks. I see Eberhard and Chris Despain. So, firstly, Eberhard.
Okay. I had also suggested that we replace the word created by established, because that's the word that's also used in that RFC. So I'm quite happy with that. I would also be willing to accept if we say established or redelegated. In other words, that would take out the ones where, you understand, that would take out your concern.
It partly would. Let's carry on listening to the debate. So next is Chris.
Yeah, I was only trying to contribute to the fall of the word created. Eberhard's suggestion of established works, as does, existed before. Either of those two would work.
Okay, so...
Was that existed? or established in the second version you had, Eberhard? I might have missed it.
Eberhard had established, I think, as a suggestion, which you've got in there, I think, Bernie, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah, I think if you got rid of the first created, established question mark or, then it, so it reads, country code top level domains established or redelegated before the publication of that RFC. That, I think, seems reasonably satisfactory and addresses all the concerns that
have
been raised. So you'd be happy with that, Chris? I see Nigel and Eberhard have their hands raised. Chris has his hand raised, but now gives us a green tick. Nigel.
Okay, firstly, I'm happy with 5.3.2.2.1. And I've now got the thing in front of me, so I can make the pedantic quibbling call on .2.
Okay.
When convenient.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. Eberhard.
Again, I can live with established or redelegated to take the your concern out of it. And since I proposed the language, I obviously agree with whatever it comes out of it.
Excellent. Thank you, Eberhard. I think Nigel's still got his hand up for the next point.
Yes, because we're moving on to .2.
Yeah.
There's a question from Kim in the, chat. Kate.
Yeah, that's what I was bringing up. That's why I raised my hand.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Can we address that?
Yes. And so Kim is saying there is no sponsoring organization in RFC 1591 as the concept was introduced later.
No, that's not the that's not
no such thing. It doesn't exist.
So my question was, does that section mean that any TLD that existed before March 1994, has that requirement not apply in perpetuity, or that any manager appointed prior to those days does not have that requirement?
Manager, I believe.
Yeah. That's why I put in redelegated, because that takes the creation or existing out of it. For example, .cl, .pr, .na were created or exist established before 941 and have the same manager, so that would apply. Some others were established, .de was established before, .au was established before, but has a change in manager afterwards, so that does not apply. Never mind that.
Yeah, this change that you're typing in is changing the meaning totally.
Huh? No, I don't want the word manager in there.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's disregard that. That's Bernie just working away in the background. But so back to Kim's point. Did that answer your question fully, Kim?
I think so. I think obviously the wording needs to be tightened up to reflect that, but.
I think it pretty much does, Kim. It's very clear. It says established or redelegated before the publication of. That makes it fairly clear.
Yeah.
The domain can be established or redelegated prior, but it doesn't make clear whether that exemption then stays with the domain or it's just limited to the particular manager.
Okay, that point I do take. Keith, I'll shut up and start working on something quietly, your words here, and get back to everybody.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Chris. I understand Kim's point. And, yeah, I think the issue for me here, for example, would be that, .nz was delegated initially in 1988 or 1989, the current organisation was redelegated in 1995, and the current organisation fully subscribes to RFC 1591 being the guiding principles for the operation of the CCTLD. So even though it was created or established before RFC 1591, .nz has changed, the redelegation aspect answers that question for me. Whether we can introduce greater clarity to the text or not given how close we are to agreement on it and the relative unambiguity of it, we should maybe test that a little bit more. But I see we have a number of speakers now, so I've got Nigel, Martin and Eberhardt. So firstly, Nigel.
Okay, first of all, I agree with what's in front of me. If we start talking about sponsoring organisation, this will not finish in two meetings.
We're not talking about sponsoring organisations, Nigel.
I heard sponsoring organisation mentioned by Kim or by Stephen reading what Kim said. So if we
broke that down for me, so take that off the table.
Okay. I like what I see. I think any attempt to refocus it is going to actually take a lot more time. We will end up something like we've got in front of us.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. Martin.
Thanks. On the redelegation addition that we've put in, would it be better to say last redelegated, because it might have been redelegated before the publication of RFC 1591 and then redelegated afterwards. It just seems to me that, as it is at the moment, it's not quite as clear as it should be.
Thank you, Martin. I think that would answer Kim's, or help clarify Kim's issue. Certainly helps me. So the suggestion is we put in the word last before the word redelegated. Can we discuss that as a possible variance to the text? I see Eberhardt, then Stephen. I see Christopher Baines agreeing with that, with a green tick. Firstly, over to Eberhardt.
Martin's proposal works for me because that captures what I wanted to say. Yeah, we could also put it in a non-negative way. Say the requirement may be only expected of CCTLD level established or redelegated after the publication. But putting the last in captures it exactly, so we can use that, because that it actually is a little bit better, because it says we have thought about it once it's redelegated after the creation. It also makes sense, because then if you redelegate while RFC is in force, it automatically means that you are bound by it. It makes sense. Let's use it. I'm for last.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Eberhardt. Stephen.
I concur. I'm endorsing the text here on 53221 as I'm watching it being scribbled out in front of me.
Excellent. Thanks.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. Nigel, last comment on this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I have a mild preference for what was presented in front of me before the addition of the last, but so long as this is the last change to this text, I concur.
It's the last, last.
Okay. I think we have consensus over 53221 as it stands now. Is there any objection? Eberhardt's screen ticking. Stephen has his hand up again.
Oh,
or
sorry.
Forget. Thank you. Chris has a green tick. I'll propose that is consensus. So, Bernie, we have a green text there. Can we move on to point two? And, Bernie, you need to unmute.
To unmute, yes. Thank you, sir. 5322, we'll go through Eberhardt's version, because I think Becky and I, after going through it, thought we were okay with this. The IANA function contractor, and just to put it in context, sorry, we're trying to rest what the context of notice in 5322, meaning after notice. So we have The INF function contractor and the CCTLD manager should advise how they wish to be given notice. Where no prior mechanism has been established, such notice should be at least what is acceptable between party and international private law, at a minimum including the use of registered recorded delivery mail. For the avoidance of doubt, a failure of refusal to respond to such a notice may not be taken as consent. However, such failure or refusal may be a relevant factor when considering other obligations CCTLD manager, bracket, for example, misbehavior, close bracket, full stop. Over to you, sir.
You're on mute.
My apologies. Perpetually muted. I see Eberhard has his hand raised. And
as does Nigel.
So does Nigel. And Nigel had his hand raised first, but it's not showing up on my list as being raised anymore. So anyway, over to Nigel first.
Nigel, go ahead, yes.
Okay. Again, my connection to the Adobe room has bounced, so it's just coming back. I have two challenges or objections to things in here. The first is the word notice is misspelled.
Yes.
If we can correct that, please. And my other objection is the phrase failure of refusal. Can we replace that with failure or refusal, please? Sorry, there were big objections, I know.
What? No, there were typing errors.
Yes, I know that, Eberhard.
Yeah, no, but just to make it clear that everybody knows what this meant.
Yep, thanks, Nigel. Eberhard.
I was going to object to my own misspellings, because it's my original text as well. I have looked, in fact, at the recent new registrar agreement, accreditation agreement. They have got a notice provision in there which is more or less reasonable. So my plan eventually is to amend my exchange of letters to put in a similar notice thing in there so that we have that settled. I think it's at least for the ones who are communicative and where the function contractor can reach, that will solve this problem. It will not solve the problems for the ones that are disappearing in front of you. But then we must go through the motions a little bit harder than in the past, and when then nothing happens, then at least we can consider it a relevant factor.
Would it solve the problem for those who are over-communicative?
Yes, it depends. It depends how we define notice.
Excellent. Okay. Any further comments? Any further discussion? Martin has his hand raised. So, Martin.
Yes, thanks. Yes, thanks. I'm feeling a little bit concerned. The wording moved. Feeling a little bit concerned about this wording. It's keeping on moving. How it still leaves in place quite a significant opportunity for a CCTLD manager who is being asked to put something right to just ignore what is happening around them. Now, I recognize the use of the word in the first part about it being essentially normally accepted terminology. For the second part, though, the failure or refusal to respond not being taken as consent, that would seem to me to leave everything at a complete impasse. And I'm not sure how, in that particular case, the IANA manager would be able to take things forward. So I'd like some sort of clarification on that, please.
Okay, valid point, I think. I have two speakers on the list. Firstly, Chris, then Nigel. So, Chris.
I may have misread it, but I had thought that it splits effectively into two. So the IANA function contractor and the CCTLD manager should advise each other how they wish to be given notice.
Okay.
It's a piece. Where no prior mechanism has been established, then it should be at least this. And then for the avoidance of doubt, failure or refusal to respond to such a notice, I thought, applied only where no notice had been agreed. There's a huge echo here I'm getting.
Yeah, I think
but I sound quite posh, so I'm quite pleased with that.
I think it's actually Nigel's... that's better. Thank you.
So my point, I think, is that I think Martin has a point. I'm not saying it can't be answered, but if the clause that refers to for the avoidance of doubt is supposed to refer to any notice, even notice by agreed term, there it goes again, then Martin has a point that needs to be sorted out, I believe.
Chris, can you clarify that? Or you're really down there?
It seems to me that the first sentence is very clear. It says, I need to agree with IANA.
It's all very clear down to where you're going for the avoidance of doubt, ..
Well, the question is, does the for avoidance of doubt sentence apply to both of the preceding sentences?
Ooh.
Or just the second sentence? Because if it applies to the sentence, the IANA function contractor and the CCTLD manager should advise each other how they wish to be given notice, then it means that we tell each other how we should give notice, and then when I'm given that notice, my refusal, my non-response is outside. So Martin's point is valid on that basis.
Would we in those circumstances be better to have the first sentence as point two and take the rest of the wording and put it in as point three?
It depends on Eberhard's intention, Keith. If Eberhard intends the avoidance of doubt sentence to refer to both circumstances, then we need to deal with it in a different way.
Okay, let's go to Eberhard to have his hand raised anyway.
Well, can I just get my point in before you do that?
Oh, okay. It's you. Okay. Certainly, Nigel.
First of all, Chris is right in spotting the ambiguity in
this. This is not acceptable, and my hand was up for a long while.
Yeah, sorry.
So was mine.
Sorry, Eberhard. Nigel's was first on the list. Anyway, it's not a competition. We'll all get a chance to put our point.
Chair's prerogative.
So please continue, Nigel.
Okay. First of all, Chris is right to point out that there's some ambiguity in this, but it's irrelevant because failure or refusal to respond to any notice can never be taken as consent by definition. This is nothing to do with this drafting or anything. It's a general principle. If I don't respond to something, that's not consent. It might be misbehavior, it might be rudeness, it might be anything, but it can never be consent in any circumstances in any part of the world.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. Eberhard.
Al?
You're on mute, Eberhard.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay. This is a button of the microphone that goes off once in a while, or if I start shouting too much. it's exactly the point. If the manager says, no, I refuse to reply, I refuse to do what you say, it cannot be consent. It means if you send me a registered letter and I don't reply, it means I don't reply. It does not mean, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. And the IANA function contractor has in the past told CCTLDs, if you don't respond by a certain date, it be taken as consent. In the AU redelegation, in the Kenya redelegation, it both stated the previous manager became uncommunicative and therefore it was taken consent. And that's the issue that I have with this.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. If there is no consent, it goes in the unconsented redelegation method. It's just,
okay.
if there is...
I think that's valid.
If there is a substantial misbehavior, consent doesn't matter. And if failure to communicate exists, it's a further factor that can be taken into consideration in the proceedings.
Okay. So where does that leave us? I think I've got lost in where we are in terms of, is the text okay where it is, or are there still objections, or can someone help me clarify what's still wrong? I see Chris and Nigel have their hands raised.
So Keith, I agree with the interpretation, Eberhard's interpretation. Martin's point is unanswered. Well, sorry, I'll rephrase that. The question now is, if Martin's point is valid, which is that if a manager simply does not respond, and intentionally does not respond, then what happens? Then his concern was that seems to disappear into a hole. And I think that's where I disagree with Martin. I think it doesn't. I think what happens is that a failure to respond means that you are now dealing with misbehavior, and a failure to continually respond is heading towards substantial misbehavior, and I think you deal with it that way. And so I'm prepared to accept that what we're talking about here, the wording that we have here, is working.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Next was Nigel.
Well, firstly, I agree with everything that Chris has just said. And secondly, if you are looking for some assistance in the matter, I think simply substituting the word such with the word any fixes the apparent ambiguity.
Okay, there's a suggestion for the word such to be substituted with any, noted by Bernie. Stephen.
I was endorsing Chris's discussion, and I'm doubly endorsing Nigel's discussion, because I think it wraps it up quite nicely.
Okay. I'd be interested in hearing back from Martin as to his feeling on the as it stands now. If you're there, Martin.
Yes, I'm still here. And I'm still reading and rereading the text. I think I understand.
Martin, I think you're there. I think you got what you want.
Oh, thank you, Steve. I think I understand the points that have been made, and that would seem to address my concerns. But I think I would like to have the opportunity of rereading later to make sure that I am that does respond to my concerns. I suppose really what I am actually concerned about is that if a CCTLD manager from the start refuses to have any communication with IANA, then that leads to a problem. But then, as Chris has just pointed out, and as Eberhard has just pointed out, that would still allow the IANA to turn around and say, right, okay, in spite of the fact that you're not communicating, you are in a point of misbehavior, and therefore we go ahead with a forced redeclination from IANA. But the implications of that I'm not sure I properly understand yet.
Okay. Thanks, Martin. We're certainly going to have a second reading. We're not going to sign off on this tonight.
Can we go back and try to narrow Martin's concerns?
I've got a speaking list, so let's work our way through and see if we can get any closer. I have Nigel then, Stephen then.
I'm just left up, that's all.
Okay, I'll take them down then.
Sir.
Yep.
Keith.
Bernie, yep.
Scribe's privilege here. Are we talking about one any, the first any, or the second any? For Nigel.
I think we should talk about both.
I believe you. Yeah, that's why I put both in, but I want to make sure that it's comfortable for everyone. So we would replace the such just by any's.
Yeah.
Okay. Seems happy with
Thank
that.
You, sir.
Nigel is not objecting.
Nigel's going to take.
Sorry,
you have to take that. You have to take the A out. It's not to any A notice. It's to any notice. The A needs to come out.
Okay. I'd really appreciate one speaker at once and in the orderly fashion because it's very difficult to hear. Once you start talking, it cuts out anyone else's voices from me being able to hear them. So I only get half words coming through. Okay, I have Eberhard with his hand raised, so Eberhard.
I think we should take the second any out and just leave failure or refusal, because it makes more sense. But I am happy with what Martin is saying. The RFC clearly states that the manager has to inform the next higher authority about what's happening. Keep them apprised of the situation, if I'm not mistaken. I can look it up. So if somebody says to IANA, go and do a natural act on yourself, that's misconduct per se. If they refuse consistently to communicate and then even fail to reply to a proper served notice, that's misconduct. Okay?
Okay.
It will not apply to CCTLDs who enter into a who applies ICANN how they want to have it done, because that implies they want to be given notice, they will respond, and if they don't, they refuse to do it, then that takes the issue. But these are separate issues. It's not consent, and they should be, like Chris said, they should be dealt with a separate issue. I have no problems with what Martin is saying, that consistent failure to communicate is misconduct and should be acted accordingly. But that doesn't mean if somebody has email issues or has internal strife issues, Kalashnikovs abound, or yesterday in Egypt's new government, that can be held against in any way as consent.
Yep, fair enough. I think that's covered in the consent document anyway. Thanks, Eberhard. I have Stephen.
Can we engage Martin again to get him to finesse what his issue is with this? Because it'd be nice to wrap up 53222.
Well, I think we have Martin at the point of saying that he has accepted the text but wants to reserve for a second reading. With the way it stands now. Please correct me if I'm wrong, Martin.
That's entirely right, Keith.
Where does that leave us? We reread it again in Durban?
Yes. It because this is virtually new wording tonight, I think it has to go through a second reading.
It has to go through another round, yes.
So,
I agree with that.
So I think you know, we appear to have achieved consensus as we stand right now, and we give everyone the opportunity to re-review it. Any improvements to the text obviously would be useful. So I think that's as far as we can go with that at this point.
Okay, cheers, Keith. That's good for me. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Stephen. So Stephen hasn't taken his hand down. Eberhard and Nigel both have their hands raised. So
yeah, I've just put mine up.
Martin, can you maybe, if you have got wording that improves on this, let's send this to the mailing list before Durban so that we can get it done in Durban, that we get it finalized in Durban. It's like a second or third draft, but we can still maybe put a little bit of fine-tuning on it as long as the meaning is what I've written there. The actual wording, I don't have an issue with.
I think noted. Thanks, Nigel.
I was going to say something entirely similar. Let's take this one paragraph and see what we can work on, and I don't mind doing it on the wider list, and let's have something that we all are happy with. I know Martin said he's happy now, but he wants, and quite rightly, to take the time to digest it over the next week or so. But if there's anything that comes up, let's not just not do anything till we meet face to face. Let's come to Durban with something that's cooked and not half cooked.
Okay, look, I'm prepared to take your directions on this, so I'll put the challenge to Martin. Martin, if on rereading in the cold, hard light of day in the next couple of days, if you're still unsatisfied in any way with the text, could you please post to the list your unhappiness and any suggested changes, and let's try and see if we can go into Durban with full resolution. Martin has his hand raised, so Martin.
Yeah, that's fine, but I would appreciate having a copy of the text as it now stands in writing. I don't know how I missed it, but both the 53221 and 2 paragraphs as they were presented on the screen to us today were entirely new to me. I hadn't seen the earlier draft, so whether I've just missed an email from Eberhard or not, I don't know. I have no copy of this material electronically or in paper, so I would appreciate having a copy and one that I can share around with colleagues here as well. Thank you.
Sure. Martin, just noting, this came about as text that Eberhard had put up with Bernie, so it wasn't actually on the list prior to tonight, so you haven't missed anything. It just wasn't, it was late text. Certainly I'll commit Bernie to circulating the latest agreed document to the list immediately after this meeting. Chris has his hand raised. So Chris.
Thank you, Keith. Look, I'm sorry to do this, but I really need clarity on this, and I'm not clear. I'm comfortable with the sentences and the words. I get it, but I unless I misheard Eberhard, what he said, and I agree with him, is that where you have agreed how you are going to get notice with the IANA function contractor, the for the avoidance of doubt sentence does not apply to you because you have already agreed that notice should be by camel or whatever it may be. So I don't think that is clear from the current the current paragraph of 53222.
Okay, thanks, Chris. I'll go back to my suggestion earlier. I think if we broke it and starting with the where no prior mechanism sentence, if that was broken into point three, I think that does bring the clarity to that would satisfy everyone. However, I see both Eberhard and Nigel have their hands raised, so Eberhard firstly.
No. My point is that failure or refusal to respond cannot mean consent. It can mean misconduct, but it cannot mean consent. We have discussed the consent, like Becky said, in the consented redelegation document. Non-refusal is not consent. That's what we discussed, and I just wanted to restate this here. Because you're right in a way. How does then a pre-agreed mechanism help us? It will take doubt out of most CCTLDs that are communicative, because we know we have a certain way and that's the way it is and no problem. It gives more security. But still, if you don't reply, it doesn't mean you accept it. Or you consent to it. You may have to accept it, but it doesn't mean you consent to it.
Okay. Nigel.
Yeah, I can see why Chris is belaboring that to a little extent, and I'll just kind of try and explain what I said earlier a little bit more. For the avoidance of doubt, the sentence that starts "for the avoidance of doubt" is stand alone in my view. It applies to everything. If you have notice, then it's clear when somebody's refusing. But the point is that refusal is never consent. It might be something equally bad or equally that leads to a change in manager, such as substantial misbehavior. But it's a basic principle. Simply not answering cannot be taken as consent. It just can be taken as a lack of answering.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. Stephen now has his hand raised, and then Eberhard. So firstly, Stephen.
I concur with what Nigel said and also previous comments. I really think we need to endeavor to get this put away prior to Durban, so I encourage Martin to take it back to his management if he feels he needs to do so and get this endorsement on this language, because I think this is where we need to be. And,
okay, I think Martin's undertaken to do that.
I'm just impressing upon him that we need to do this, and also upon all of us to try to really get this one nailed down on the list, because we're not going to get it nailed down tonight, but get it nailed down on the list before Durban, so that we have this one in the, done before Durban, if at all possible.
Yep. But I think Stephen, we're now addressing Chris's point rather than Martin's point. Just for the record.
I'm comfortable the para works as is now. I said that in the chat room.
Ah, okay. Thank you, Chris. Eberhard.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that Chris, for the scribes, that Chris now agrees with the paragraph that he thinks. But I also agree we need to put this to bed. In other words, I would like to have this final in Durban, that we can say in Durban it's done. So we need to get, if there is changes to the language, we need to discuss this on the list beforehand. I don't want to put pressure on with regards to reflection, but I would like to point out we've got 2 weeks and we should be able to come up with something that we can achieve consensus on the list, so that in Durban we read it for the final time and be done.
Yeah, well, I think, we've been on this particular topic for more than 6 months, so nobody would like to get over this hurdle more than me.
Can I still say something else?
Sure.
Kim mentioned on the chat room that whether it is expected that notice protocol needs to be mutually agreed between the CCDLD manager and the function contractor. Basically, that's an issue that I have been wrangled with. I personally think that the function contractor should not be in a position to tell the CCTLD what should be acceptable to the CCTLD, because the situation may be different the other way around. As far as I am concerned, that's why we put the guideline in, as long as there is a reasonable period. If I say I want to have it done in a certain way, in Namibia, for example, it must be done on paper with black ink signs, and blue ink is legally not valid, for, just as an example, then that's an issue that we might need to put in there. And so I don't want one side to be able to hold the other side up in a way by saying, no, I don't agree with the way I have to give notice to you, as long as it's reasonable. Therefore, I think 253 CCTLD managers are more or less reasonable people, most of them at least. So nobody is going to make a big drama about such a protocol. I, for one, will go by something which is very similar to what is in the registrar agreement, because it makes fairly good sense.
Okay, thanks, Eberhard. Kim?
Yeah, I think my concern is, we might all agree that facility managers are all reasonable people, but we might get given notice that, a particular facility manager thinks that it's appropriate and reasonable that, IANA must hand deliver notice to them in person by some mechanism, for example, which is something
via camel
we wouldn't be able to do. So, in the absence of a definition of what's reasonable, it seems to me that the IANA function shouldn't have to blindly accept anything the facility manager might tell us is the mechanism by which they wish to receive notice.
Yes, it could be a bit difficult to learn how to speak in smoke signals and so on. So
this can be solved. This can be solved. If we take out where no prior mechanism has been established and uppercase the S in such notice, then we say we have a minimum standard that both parties should agree upon.
Okay, look, and I think Chris is indicating some agreement with that.
Kim's point is valid. I mean, but we can solve it by saying, okay, we define a minimum standard.
Okay. Well, look, I think thanks, Eberhard. And I think Bernie's noted that, and we will. Bernie has also undertaken to circulate this text immediately after the meeting to the list. So let's take this one to the list and see if we can nail it on the list. I think we're just a hair's breadth away from final consensus. So let's relook at it in the cold hard light of day and deal with it on the list. Bernie, do we have more text to debate tonight?
No, sir.
Okay. Is there any other comments in terms of the revocation document then?
Should we not try to nail this tonight and get it done with?
There are a lot of people who are not on the call tonight, so I would like to give everybody the opportunity to comment.
Okay. I defer to the chair on that one.
I will, as soon as Bernie is posted to the list, I will follow up, urging people to try and agree this so that we can go to Durban with
it'd be lovely to have this nailed out, banged out on the list.
Yeah, remember that at this stage, too, this is only the analysis document of revocation. We still need to go back to the revocation chapter and deal with it once we've agreed these aspects. So we're not over the revocation topic entirely at this stage either, or by Durban either. But I think if we can get this nailed in,
I'm pushing because we're so close.
Yes. Oh, look, nobody wants it more than I do. But okay, I think everyone on the call understands. Let's deal with it on the list, and I'm sure everyone on this call is committed to doing that. Okay, can we move ahead on the agenda? Any other business. One is we have to provide a progress report for Durban. Unfortunately, we didn't get our draft to this call, but I think we'll get a draft from Bernie, Bart and I and Becky over the next short while. We'll put it out on the list for comments. I think it's essentially a chair's report on the progress of the group, and it's fairly binary, but I always appreciate the opportunity for the working group to make comment on it, so we'll get it to the list before we finalise it for Durban, if that's okay with everybody. And I'll take Simon as assent. We do need to discuss the GAC engagement for Durban. I'm fairly keen that at a very minimum Becky, Bernie, Bart and myself should meet with Suzanne and Frank in Durban quite formally, and to kind of, now that we can see that we're coming to a conclusion on revocation, that we need to get the GAC back and engaged in this group. I'm not sure what more we can do. Certainly I've been putting it to the CCNSO Council that in the joint GAC-CCNSO session we should be discussing the progress that we've made and so on. I see one hand raised. It's Nigel. So, Nigel.
First of all, I'd very much encourage that engagement and the route that you propose forward. Secondly, I'd just comment in passing that the lack of GAC engagement over the past several months, I think, can only be taken as consent to our approach and way forward. I think the GAC have had a lot of problems, or at least maybe not problems, but work to do with new PTLD stuff. And I think the relevant people, obviously they're on the group, they're part of the group, have probably been keeping a watching eye on at least the scribes' work and the outcomes of this. So and they do pop up from time to time. So while they're not be with detail, I think they must be reasonably happy with what we're doing. Otherwise, they'd be saying so.
Isn't that a bit like no response is consent, Nigel?
Sorry, I was being a little bit ironic. I'm sorry, but no, I mean there's a point to it. Then yes, no, silence cannot be consent, which is my point. Why the engagement that the chairman proposes has to be done. We can't just let them sort of drift away and not participate at all. So, please, I welcome that.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. Stephen.
Okay, do you have any sense from Frank as to what his feelings are here going on? Because he's not actually participating, but he's obviously lurking.
I think Frank did put an apology for today's call, which is a good sign that he is ready to engage. But I think we've been stuck on a topic that's maybe been not of the highest interest to the GAC until we get some text that's agreed. So I think having got very close to this point, they're probably ready to re-engage. And taking Nigel's point, they have been somewhat distracted with the new GTLD process and have decided to make that their sole sort of mission and endeavour over recent months, to the extent that we didn't have CCNSO GAC meetings at the last two ICANN meetings. So, I think the relationship suffers when we don't meet in all sorts of ways, not just for the framework of interpretation working group. So I think this meeting in Durban will be a good opportunity to re-establish that relationship and continue along. And I think if we have got through our work, that there will be very much a greater willingness for Frank and Suzanne to re-engage. So I'm quite confident going forward. There's been a blip for other reasons, and we've been stuck, so there hasn't been much point in pursuing it overly. But now the time's come that we should.
Accepted, but when we come to agreements on some principal points, you know, and they suddenly barf at us, you know, what do we say in response? You guys were there, you should have been there, but they're not there, haven't been there, and now you're objecting to it. And what do
well,
we do about that?
Well, of course, you know, there's always the chance that the GAC or someone in the GAC will object to something that we have spent many hours debating along the way too. So that's just the multi-stakeholder model in action, isn't it? And
well, I'm confident we've done our work so well there'll be little to object to.
I'd like to think so too.
Let us hope.
Okay.
Thank you, Keith.
Thanks, Stephen. Any other comments in terms of GAC engagement? If not, I don't think there's any hands up at the moment. Adobe Connect's playing up a little bit here, so I see no hands raised, but yet there were hands raised. Anyway, okay, so moving on, the other item of any other business was to work on the meeting program from Durban to Buenos Aires. I think I'll continue working on a schedule, recognising that there will be changes to the planetary times by November, with some people moving into summertime and some people moving out of summertime. So I'll build a schedule of calls for us to discuss and agree in Durban. And if there's
Fantastic.
Anything else, any other comments, any other business from anyone else? If not, thank you all for your participation. I think we've made great progress tonight, and we're just a hair's breadth away from nailing this. So thank you all for your participation and contributions, and we'll see you in Durban.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks.
Good night, everybody.
Bye. Bye.